It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome to Declare Your Independence with me, Thomas Costanzo, filling in for Ernest Hancock on Declare Your Independence. And today we have a special guest. We're going to be introducing to you Rob Gray from OpenCurrency.com. And I'd like to bring on to the show to you Rob Gray.
Thomas, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. And yourself?
Good, good, man. Where'd Ernest go today? Is he hiding?
He's actually in a boat court today.
A boat court?
What's yeah. They got they're stealing your money now for if you do things on the water. I think he jumped a wake or something like this. I don't know what
that is. Oh, cool. I got my butt kicked in court the other day here in Dallas area for, allegedly littering and driving without a driver's license.
But that's you horrible human being.
I know. It's like I'm a criminal course. Yeah, it was a great learning experience, actually. It was the first time that I was able to get myself in front of a jury, because I run a little group here in Dallas called the Three Jurist Society, and we just go around and fight each other's traffic tickets and any kind of citation where there's no victim. So in my opinion, if there's no victim, there's no crime. And so we kind of band together to help represent each other in court, co-counsel kind of thing, strategy, research, you know, preparing motions and forms. And it's coming along. We've got a long way to go, but the challenge that our group has had is that we can't seem to make it in front of an actual jury for a real trial. The cases keep getting thrown out before we ever make it that far, except for last Tuesday, a week ago today. And it was extra funny because the process at that point is so broken. I don't know if you know anything about that or even if you care to talk about that.
Oh, today. I do. I love this subject, too.
Yeah, well, the process is totally broken, and a buddy of ours here in the Ron Paul meetup in Dallas was an assistant prosecutor for the city for a number of years, and he warned me about it. He said, "You got to watch out for this thing right here." I said, "No way, man! I'm a talker. I can get around that, no problem." And he was deadly right.
And what was that thing you had to be deadly watch out for?
Well, here's the deal, right? And our process is pretty straightforward. I don't have any kind of notes in front of me, so I'll kind of wing it right now. But first rule of thumb is don't get pulled over. You know, if you're out there driving and you're in an unregistered vehicle or personal transportation device, as some people like to call it, or you're speeding or you're whatever, then get yourself a nice radar detector and don't get pulled over.
So that's the first rule. Don't play court out there on the streets.
Right. Now, I should probably listen to that rule myself because I drive like a total idiot almost all the time. But I got a great radar detector, and it definitely works. I used to think radar detectors just told you when you were going to get a ticket, and it's not true. They work wonders. So number two is do some research and know how to handle yourself if and when you do get pulled over. So, you know, a little respect and a little courtesy go a long way when you're dealing with law enforcement. And we found that about 50% of the cops out there are total jerks. And the other 50% are like reasonable human beings with a mind and can, you know, consider information and logic and reason and all kinds of other things. And if you do your homework and you can prepare yourself in a statement for when you have interaction with the police, 9 times out of 10, you'll probably be okay. I mean, Ernest knows that and exercised that fully well, you know, a couple weeks ago with the protest.
Hey, Rob, we're going to a break. We're going to our first break, okay?
Yeah, man, I'll be here.
All right, thanks a lot. I'm looking forward to talking to you some more. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking to Rob Gray about silver and open currency and how that's going to change the world. This is a great way for you to keep, you know, to have private barter and not be involved with the Federal Reserve System.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. I am Thomas Costanzo, and I'm filling in for Ernest Hancock today, and we have a special guest. We have Rob Gray from Open Currency, and Open Currency is a organization that is dedicated to open barter and creating barter networks of people where we can have private money instead of these Federal Reserve notes that have no interest attached to them. So I'd like to bring on the show to you Rob Gray, and Rob, take it away.
Hey, thanks, Thomas. We call it a group of complementary private competing currencies. So we're kind of like the Liberty Dollar on steroids in a nutshell. That helps simplify for some of the listeners out there. But a minute ago, we were talking about court. You want to continue that conversation?
Sure, yeah. That's a very interesting subject. We can go back to...
Well, number one, again, just to recap here, is don't get in trouble. Number two is if you do, have some sort of education and ability to speak professionally to law enforcement. And that's a big deal because, people go back and forth about the open carry thing all the time. They say, well, it's very clearly defined here in the Second Amendment that I've got the right to keep and bear arms, and if that's the case, then blah, blah, blah. And, people will go out there and they'll open carry without considering the consequences, and they'll do it without doing enough research on statutes and laws. So if you bump into a cop and he says, well, do you have a license to have that little sidearm there or firearm on the hip? And you say, well, no, I don't have to. You get a lot different response than if you say, well, you quote Supreme Court case A and, Texas Constitution B or whatever part of the law that you believe is entitling you to exercise the right. So research is a big thing. And then C, if you do get in trouble, you have to decide then at that point if you're going to play their game or not. So, some people have gone with the strategy of, well, I just won't acknowledge their system because I don't believe in it. And so as long as I just don't respond, then I'll be fine.
That doesn't work.
Well, it's a strategy. It's, in my opinion, not the best one. I mean, you have to go in there. Because if you don't respond to a ticket, then you get the warrants, and then, you're out there playing with your kids in the field, and next thing you know, you're getting arrested and hauled off to some faraway county jail somewhere for something you did 6 years ago that you didn't feel like taking care of. So my opinion on the whole thing is that it's definitely better to respond and get your day in court. From there, our plan here in Dallas, just as a reference, is to make it as expensive and time-consuming for them to prosecute as we possibly can. So we'll swamp the court with paperwork, with motions, with requests for continuance and this and that and the other thing. We'll always request trials by jury since the court has to pay for that, whether we win or lose. So when you when you have a ticket for $100 no seatbelt violation and it costs the court $600 to prosecute that, then from a financial perspective, it almost doesn't make sense for them to prosecute, which is exactly what we want. We know just as well as they know that all these tickets are about money anyway.
Exactly.
And so if we can remind them that we're onto their game and that we're going to make it as expensive and time-consuming for them as we possibly can, then I think we have a good opportunity to get these things thrown out before they ever make it to trial, and that's always worked well for us here. Then once you get to trial, show up with a lot of people. And that's our classic thing here. We would post it on the calendar of the meetup group and invite everybody in to come out with friends, family, relatives, puppies, all that stuff to watch the system in action.
Inaction is a key word.
Inaction, that's right. And when we would do that, we would get dismissed. We'd walk in and they'd throw the case out. They don't want a whole bunch of people in there as witnesses to this fraudulent kangaroo system. When you have a whole row of people sitting there watching the judge, watching the prosecutor, making sure that they follow the rules, then they have to start thinking about actually what the rules are, and they don't really remember, and so they're more inclined to just kind of send you on your way. So I violated that rule last Tuesday because I'm getting embarrassed here. You know, I'm telling all these people in Dallas, like, don't worry, sooner or later we'll have a big show, we'll have a lot of fun, everybody will get to learn, and we keep going and doing it, and we never make it to court. So I didn't send an email out to the group and didn't give anyone a heads up to invite them on out with me. And sure enough, the process went forward. They brought the jury out, and this is where the warning came in from my buddy here in Dallas. And his warning was that you have peremptory challenges that you can make of any juror. So they bring 15, 20, 25 jurors out. I don't remember the exact number that were there the other day, but it was quite a few. And they pick them in random order, and they seat them based on the random selection. Well, I've got the ability to toss out for any reason or for no reason at all any three people that I don't like, right? So the prosecution has the ability to do the same thing. So we each get to make three, we each get to excuse three people from the panel for any reason or for nothing. So we're going through and asking a series of questions. How many miles a year do you drive? Are you related to anybody, here today? So on and so forth. What do you do for a living? All these questions. But before we get to that point, the prosecution is allowed to ask three questions of the entire panel, which are blanket questions. The first one is, are you a convicted felon? And if there are any convicted felons there, they get to excuse those people without actually using up one of their three peremptory challenges. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's question number one. Question number two, are you related to the defendant? Pretty simple question. If the answer is yes, they'll excuse you, and they don't use up one of their challenges. Question number three is, anything that you don't like about the law? Any laws you don't like,
right.
And they just kind of leave it out there hanging. And this little girl in the front row, she was at least 18, but she looked kind of young, puts her hand up, and she says, yeah, I got a ticket a while back. I didn't really think that, I violated any law. I don't remember what the ticket was for, but the cop was really mean. And, I don't really think I broke the law. And they're like, oh, no kidding. Okay, wow, what a shame. Do you think that'll interfere with your ability to to follow your oath of the law here today? And she's like, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. I should be okay. So this poor girl, they just excuse her right away.
Yeah, and she's going to be on your side.
She's the one person there that might find, that whatever I say in court is, maybe right, and they excuse her. So essentially anybody that's going to use their conscience or reason or logic to determine the validity of a law is excused for cause.
Mm-hmm.
They just throw them right off. And if they bring 20 jurors in and 20 jurors put their hand up and say, I don't like the law, we'll excuse all 20 of them and bring in a new 20. And they can just keep doing that all day long until they get the jury that's going to follow the law. So the question is, how is that possible? It's been challenged plenty of times all the way up to the Supreme Court that it's okay for the state to do that. And every single state does it the same way. They can excuse anybody they want for no reason, just because they don't like a particular law. And it's a total joke. I didn't believe my friend when he told me about this. He's like, no, they'll just throw him right out. I said, it's impossible. And sure enough, just like he predicted, that's exactly what happened.
Well, as interesting as last week, I went to 4409's trial, and they brought in 50 people for his trial, and then they whittled it all the way down to 10.
Yeah.
And it was, but the thing that was just amazing to me, and I remarked to myself and other people that were there, is that with this type of process, it took them a day just to, choose the jurors, and then three more days worth of talking.
Yeah.
But the process is so mind-numbingly slow that produce this sham, if you had to do it every single time, if you had to do this every single case, then the whole system would implode on itself.
Yeah.
You'd have to build towers up to the clouds full of courts in order to propagate the system. And it's really amazing because at one point in time, I was working for this woman doing some handyman work, and while I was there, she had another handyman there and a painter, a guy doing the lawn, and all these other, she probably had $500 worth of money going out and just the people working around her house. I mean, she even had a person there who was just organizing, which really is just somebody who just helps you throw stuff away. But the point is that if you have a gravy job, Are you going to do that job as slowly as you possibly can, or are you going to do it as quickly as you can?
Right. Right.
Well, of course you're going to do it as slowly as you can, because you don't want the job to run out.
Right.
And so that's how I look at it with the government, is they have this gravy boat in front of them, and if they eat it really slowly, then no one else can take from the boat. That, you know, then they're the ones that are in front of the table. No one else can sit in their place.
Right. Well, our mission is the same thing that you were just mentioning a few minutes ago. You know, if we can get everybody, well, maybe not even everybody, but maybe even just 10%. You know how it goes for the, you know, the average, you know, person that goes into a courtroom or gets a ticket. They're scared to death.
Right.
They go into court. The prosecutor's like, well, listen, I could probably cut you a break, you know, and I can get you deferred whateverment and this and that, and I can reduce the fine. And you feel like they're your hero. They're doing you this huge favor.
No, they're not your hero.
Points off your license, and you're just so inclined to take the deal. It's like, oh, yeah, thank you so much. And then you go and you tell your friends, oh, check out this great job I did today in court. I got to, you know, they let me go on this thing, and you're all excited about it. That was all part of their plan anyway. So they'll give you, you know, two more tickets than you really probably needed in the first place, knowing that they'll drop one of them, and everybody's happy. So our plan is, if we get 10% of the people that get tickets to do, you know, what we do, and just, you know, make it expensive and time-consuming for them, the system will shut down. And not only because it's just time-consuming, but because you're excused from jury duty if you've done it already in the last 6 months. There won't be enough jurors to find.
Right. Okay.
So a lot of creative things there, but we can continue after the break.
Yeah, exactly. This is a great subject, and we're actually doing this here in Phoenix. We have a meetup group that does this type of legal advocacy, and they have a meeting. And if you're interested in checking out the meeting, send me an email to sales@freedomsphoenix.com. That's sales@freedomsphoenix.com. Anyway, we'll be returning after the break with Rob Gray from Open Current.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Devil in me, had a falling out. Violation of contract, beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Thomas Costanzo, on Ernest Hancock's Declare Your Independence. And we have with us Rob Gray from Open Currency. That's opencurrency.com.
Anyway, hey.
And so, Rob, we're going to wrap up a little bit with your legal work.
Yeah. Then, long story short, we went through the jury selection process, and then they introduced a pretrial motion for suppressing any kind of legal arguments. I'm not allowed to mention the word law. I can't pull up any legal definitions. I can't reference any Supreme Court cases. I can't do anything that involves the law.
So, why you're in court, though? I mean, you're in court and you can't talk about the law?
You can't talk about the law in the courtroom. Where can you talk about the law? And that was my question, but they restricted it. I couldn't get 5 words in without an objection, and it was a disaster. And it was really embarrassing, actually, because I was all excited about it, and I'm kind of glad that nobody was there. But I did end up recording it on my iPhone, which probably isn't allowed, but I did it anyway.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? You're not allowed to record anything in the courtroom. I mean, what are they so freaking afraid of? I mean, I know we went down to Yuma with Pastor Anderson, and you can't even bring a phone into the Yuma County Courthouse. I mean, what are – and then you have the cops. They're all texting and doing – they got their phones. I mean, you have two classes of citizens. And it's even also evident in the fact that you have, you know, two line. I don't know how it is in Texas, but here in Arizona, you have a line of people that can go in for that work for the court, or you're a cop, or you're in the robber class. And then if you're in the robbed class, then you have a separate line that you can go through.
Yeah, well, not only that, but the biggest frustration for me with this female officer was she went on for minute after minute about how long she's been on the force and her record, and I said, just one question for you about that to cross-examine. When was the last time you reconfirmed your oath of office? You don't have to answer that. Objection, she doesn't have to answer that. I couldn't get anything about an oath of office. That was like one of the most surprising things for me, but it was a lot of fun. At some point, I'll download it from my iPhone and post it somewhere on the internet. And,
you can post it on Freedom's Phoenix if you like.
Sure, yeah. Well, I'll put it up there so that everybody has an opportunity to go through it and learn from my mistakes. if they can be called that. But it was a lot of fun. It was a great learning experience and quite the adventure. So I wish Ernest all the best of luck as he battles with boat court.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll hear about it tomorrow.
Good. I'll listen in. So anyway, on to more important things. American Open Currency Standard, like I said before, is a collection of complementary private competing barter currencies. We've taken the Liberty Dollar model, the valuation formula, and kind of kicked it into high gear by decentralizing it so that anybody that wants to jump in and get involved with creating their own barter medallions can do so. As long as they kind of conform to the standard, then they can be traded and circulated with each other.
Yeah, so, Freedom's Phoenix did that with you.
Freedom's Phoenix has a beautiful phoenix there rising out of the fire and has a great barter medallion, hopefully a buzzing little barter economy going on now in Phoenix. So a couple other examples of some groups. The Von Mises Institute just last week or maybe the week before released their official barter medallion. You can see that if you go to the Mises.org website and purchase it there. But I think the focus here is barter. It's not necessarily about silver. It's not necessarily about, you know, competing currency or ending the Fed or any of those things. It's about the idea of getting people back to local economic systems, which is really the key. And we've chosen a, you know, standardized medium of exchange that's based off of silver content to kind of create legitimacy for the whole thing, transparency, accountability, and ownership of the property at the same time. So that's the basic overall premise for the American Open Currency Standard.
Got it. Well, that's great. And you're trying to take some pointers from what happened with the Liberty Dollar, because I know I was when they were doing their thing, I never actually became a distributor for them, but
yeah,
I would buy.
Well, that's how I got my start.
Oh, is that correct, huh?
I got hooked up with those guys right after they were raided by the FBI. So I had a great advantage because I got to kind of learn from all their mistakes. And I saw quite a few of them. I mean, certainly the Liberty Dollar has done a lot of great things, but we've got to be realistic with our judgment and see what we can learn from the things that they've done in the last 10 or 11 years and apply changes to that now to move forward. So I got involved as an RCO, learned quite a bit about how to actually put the whole thing together. So you know, a lot of people had some of the components, but I was able to see all of the components and put them together to make a complete picture and then implement it here in Dallas, which went very well. And it was quite profitable once it came together, and it was beneficial for the community. So it hit all the buzz, all the important values that I had determined were going to be integral to make this thing work. So it hit those things. And then I figured out that, if we make a couple changes, we can avoid the legal complications that hit the Liberty Dollar. And the biggest one was that it's just a barter currency. We're not going head-on against the Federal Reserve. We're not trying to challenge their legality.
Their authority?
Yeah, exactly right. So we're just kind of operating on the sideline as a little barter group. And I think that it's very clear under the law that we'll be allowed to remain to do our thing without being bothered by the Big Bad Wolf.
Right, yeah, because on your coins it says 50. It doesn't say 50 what? It's just 50.
Right. And we get a lot of pressure and a lot of hassle from people in the marketplace that don't understand the whole valuation formula.
Okay.
And there's a big story behind that that we can get into if you like. But
boring. We have to we're taking a break here, but we'll be coming right back in the next few minutes and be coming back with from Ernest Hancock and Declare Your Independence. Thomas Costanzo.
All the world over, so easy to see. People everywhere just wanna be free.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. My name is Thomas Costanzo, sitting in for Ernest Hancock, and we have an exciting guest on the line. We have Rob Gray from Open Currency, and he's talking about open currency and how that's going to improve our lives through
that's
the use
right.
of barter systems.
It's all about improving life, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Right,
see,
exactly.
The whole thing that I think is that if you're going to implement some sort of system like this, if you're going to do something, you got to provide some sort of incentive for people to participate. That's always the problem with Gresham's Law. You know, it's like, okay, good money is always going to get pushed out by bad money. If I walk into a store somewhere and I offer for $16.10 worth of goods or service, if I offer cash or if I offer silver, the person that's accepting is always going to want to accept the better money, but I'm always going to want to spend the bad money. So if silver's worth 1610 or whatever silver's worth today right now, then I'm not going to want to spend it because I'd rather have the silver. Does that make any sense at all?
Oh, exactly. I know when I was spending the Liberty dollars, I'd do the drop, you know, and like I'd go into McDonald's and I'd, you know, buy whatever it is I was going to buy, and I'd drop the chain, you know, the coins onto the person's hand. Well, lots of times they wouldn't buy the company doesn't want it, but the person would take money out of their pocket and put it into the till and then take that silver, because inherently we know that this has value, where these Federal Reserve notes are just fiat currency, have no value. The only thing they're backed by is the ability of the government to shoot people.
Right. But the challenge is that if you walked into my shop right now and I offered you $15 for your ounce of silver, would you take it? If I offered you $15 worth of stuff, whatever it is that I have, it's something you want, and I offered you $15 worth of my stuff for 1 ounce of your silver, would you do it?
Not unless I really, really needed it, and that's all I had.
Well, would it be a good deal?
No.
Well, for it would be a good deal for me, but not for you. What about if I offered you $15.50 or $16? You know, now you're break even. You're not losing, but you're not gaining, but you had to buy it, ship it, and all this other stuff. So you run around with the problem of what is an ounce of silver really worth? Is it really worth the price as it's listed on, you know, KitcoSilver.com or whatever the Monix or...
No, because you go in a silver shop. You go into the silver shop, and it's $3 to $4, $5 over what they say it's the spot price is anyway.
Right. So the question then becomes, how do you create a system so that people can reliably and without a whole lot of work trade precious metals for things that they want, goods and services? And that's where the AOCS standard comes in. So we set an arbitrary value, which is what we call our suggested trading price, and we provide it as a entry point for negotiation for when somebody wants to trade their metal. And we also go out and we pre-negotiate relationships with barter groups all across the country so that they can actually exchange it for barter currency of that value. So the challenge with our system for people that want to understand it is understanding the difference between the face value of our currency and the intrinsic value of the metal that backs up our currency. And it's a little bit difficult to wrap your mind around it first, but once you give it some time, it starts to take shape and make sense. But the point is that a currency is worth whatever you can spend it for. And I think that brings me to my next point here, which is really the most exciting thing that I've seen in a long time. And that's the initiation here in Dallas of what we call the AG Trading Post. And the AG Trading Post is a general merchant like no other. It's a store that sells anything and everything you might need to live, survival, gear, tents, clothing, hemp clothing, vitamins, minerals, protein, powders, organic foods, grass-fed beef, all kinds of great stuff. You know, all locally or mostly locally produced with a great focus on made in America and made local. But it exclusively accepts payment in gold and silver. That's it.
Hmm.
So now you've got this gold and silver, you know, slashing around in your pocket, and you say, well, where can I go to spend this stuff? Oh, I can go to the AG Trading Post. And the AG Trading Post will give you an exchange rate. And it's a documented exchange rate, and it's always more than what the metal is worth. So if you come in with a generic round from some bullion shop, we'll give you spot plus two for it. If you come in with a Silver Eagle, we'll give you spot plus three for it, market plus three. If you come in with an AOCS approved round, which is our brand, then we'll give you face value for it, which is $50. So we'll give you an equivalent value based on the metal that you have and the metal that we prefer. So it's the first time in the history, I think, or the recent history of America, that a merchant has actually put their hand up and said, you know what, I'm familiar with this gag, paper money thing. It's not real. It's completely fraudulent. It will fail eventually. Who knows if it'll be next month, next year, or never, or 10 years from now.
But fail it will.
My lifetime, but it will someday, sooner or later, and I'm not going to accept it at my place of business anymore. I'm not taking paper in exchange for my hard work, my effort, my creations, my time, my energy. I'm not going to do it anymore. So I don't know of any other company or business in the entire country that's actually gone that far yet. But I think that the AG Trading Post will set the precedent for that across the U.S. for businesses to begin refusing cash as payment. No credit cards, no cash, no green dollars, no paper money, no debt instruments, just value.
Wow.
So the AG Trading Post, the website's coming soon. It's actually opening here October 1st, but agtradingpost.com, where you can go find more information about it. And when it opens, it'll be, you know, spectacular, and it'll really be the cornerstone for the local trade economy. So that's the answer to the valuation question. If your piece of silver says 50 on it, is there somewhere that I can go to actually spend it for reasonably, you know, priced goods and services of dependable quality and craftsmanship for $50 of that stuff? If I take this ounce of silver down to the AG trading post, can I get something that I want and get $50 worth of it with an ounce of silver? And the answer to that question is yes. So we'd love to see people take ownership of this model that we put together here, which we have yet to see if it's successful, but take ownership of it and replicate it across the country.
I love it. I think it's a great idea. Now, let me ask you, what happens if someone wanders into your store and all they have is these worthless paper things in their pockets that people call dollars in them?
Well,
and they want to buy something.
We understand that the Federal Reserve note is highly regarded in some circles, and so therefore we do want to provide a simple medium for people to convert from their worthless money to real money. And so therefore we've got a vending machine where you slide in a $20 bill and it kicks out a 25 piece.
I love it.
That's one thing. People want to buy larger quantities and get a better price, then they'll be able to deal directly with the mint, take physical delivery on site. So it's kind of like a buyer's club, where the more that you buy in or the more that you commit to the local economy, then the lower the price is for each one of the trade units. So it scales over volume. It's kind of neat. But, yeah, we'll refuse cash. You walk in, and this place is mostly a destination anyway, so we're not along the main drag here. We don't expect a whole lot of people to come wandering in off the street. But there's a huge network here in Dallas of people that are already buying gold and already buying silver. And if we can give them a place to go to spend those things for more than they paid for them, then we think that they'll identify that as being valuable and will prefer to spend their gold or silver and take the cash that they would have spent and go out and buy new gold or silver with it. So we want to continue pumping more silver and more gold into our local trade economy.
Right, and that's good for the economy. I was looking at a website that someone sent to me about slow money.
Yeah.
And I think it was called Slow Money. But anyway, what it talked about was how the speed of which our money is going is actually making the human condition to be a lot worse, because now we're trading with people that we don't even know. We have gotten so – it's a way of – by having the money or being able to trade directly with somebody that you know, that you trust, that
right.
You are actually building a relationship instead of trying to get the most amount of stuff that you don't need for the cheapest amount possible. It's like,
right.
Why do I have to have the cheapest, most inexpensive thing that I want? Why can't I have something that's quality, that's going to last me a long time, and buy it from somebody that I like?
Right. And that's one of the principles behind using silver again. People say, well, it's kind of wildly inconvenient to have to carry around these medallions, you know, these heavy ounces of silver in my pocket. That's just annoying, right? And it's like, well, yeah, it's a little bit harder to spend this stuff than it is, you know, plastic credit card. Well, is that because you don't have a whole lot of merchants? No, it's because you actually have to go through a physical activity of pulling it out of your pocket and counting it and dealing with the person on the other side of the counter and establishing that relationship and that trust, and getting to know them first. So it slows the whole process down. It's not necessarily the goal of our system, but I view it as a valuable side effect of what we're doing. A lot of great things happen here in Dallas, which we hope that people replicate across the country.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. You're talking about when you're talking about your AG trading post. About 20 years ago, I had found out about this whole money scam, and basically what I did was I would go get my check. I worked for a big corporation, and I'd go get my check, and I would go to the bank, and I would get all Susan B. Anthony dollars. I mean,
right.
I literally would carry $400-$500 around with me in the Susan B. Anthony in the glove box of my car, and if I wanted to buy something, I would start shelling out these Susan B. Anthony dollars, and people would just freak out because, I mean, it was just a very interesting segment of my life when I was – everything I'd buy was with Susan B. Anthony, so I could pay the rent. I would go get a money order, but I'd give them all Susan B. Anthony's, and it would just like – and then I would crack open each one of the rolls to make sure they have to count every single one. It was like
right.
You know, it's like the MasterCard commercial where they have everything's moving around very nicely because everyone's paying with their debit card, and then one guy comes out with cash, and then – you know, everything comes to a complete screeching halt. Well, when I would come there, it would be like that times 100, because now instead of giving them dollars, they get all these Susan B. Anthony dollars.
Well, what we want to see, we actually want to see a network of people come together that prefer that. You know, it's really annoying when you do it, you know, to somebody that doesn't want that. They're like, oh, this guy's so annoying. He comes in here and pays with his annoying dollars. But, you know, we'd like to think that the people that are in our network that are trading with each other actually prefer it over the other, you know, medium. They prefer, you know, somebody to come in that's mirroring their commitment to the community. Why not do business with people that uphold your value set? And I think that's what we're starting to see come together. You know, just here at the AG Trading Post, we've got all the contractors that are doing work. We've got polished concrete floors that we're doing in trade. We've got the plumbing in trade. We've got the electrician in trade. We've got the guy doing the ceiling in trade. We've got carpet in trade. I mean, we got these people, and we're hunting them out, and we're going a little bit out of our way, and they're coming a little bit out of their way so that we can do business with each other. You know, it's taking a step back from convenience and placing a new priority on relationships and value. Like, you know, are we doing something to increase the happiness and enjoyment of this contractor's life? And we wouldn't do business with them if that wasn't the case. So, you know, it's a core value of ours, and that's what allows this thing to grow so quickly. It's, you know, it's just a fundamental difference in the way people do business, and I think people like it.
Right, yeah, and it's like, yeah, for example, for me, I work here at Freedom's Phoenix, and I feel so blessed because I get to work with all my friends.
Right, right.
And
well, imagine taking that same concept and, you know, multiplying it out to all the people that you do business with across town. I mean, that's how it is. It's a social network of sorts of people that are coming together to take ownership now of this economic crisis. You know, they're voting with their wallets. They're saying, we have the ability to control our happiness right here at home by storing our wealth in something that can't be fooled around with, the same way the dollar can. It can't be made out of thin air. And then we can choose business, or we can choose where we decide to place our business, so that that money continues to come back to me. I mean, it puts all the control locally again, and I think that's, you know, another key of this whole system.
Right. So, yeah, it's like I very very rarely will you ever find me in Walmart, and the reason why is I don't want my money. I'd rather go to a local store, and even though the price is higher, I'd much rather give the money to someone that is not. I feel like Walmart is taking over, and I almost refuse. I mean, like, there's some things that they have, and it's like, you know, I got to get it there, whatever. But if very rarely will you find me in Walmart, because I'd much rather, even though it costs a little bit more, I'll go to wherever the local store is. I feel like I'm getting a better value, and I'm not supporting this industry that is just taking money out of my community, because that's all they're doing. They're funneling the money out away from my community, and by keeping the money in the community, then we have we improves the economy. And, you know, it's like if you look at the Federal Reserve, you know, the federal income tax, they steal your money and they take it to Washington, and now the states have to go panhandle from the federal government to get their money back. Well, why did they have to give it up in the first place?
Right.
You know, it's like I've never voted. I can honestly say I have never voted in my entire life. But when I do vote, I vote with my feet and I vote with my wallet. Because you know what? Those votes always get counted.
Right. And I think, you know, an important thing about the Walmart thing that you mentioned a moment ago is that the free market, you know, will always rule. And the free market, you know, there are a lot of conflicts inside of the movement and this freedom revolution thing. And that's one of them. You know, toll roads is another. But with the Walmart thing, people can choose to go to Walmart or they can choose to not go to Walmart. But the question that we pose to people that are, you know, fans of, you know, cheap Chinese stuff and low prices is, do you want to increase the likelihood of this money coming back to you, you know, sometime soon? And the answer to that is, yeah, of course. If I can, you know, do something to make sure that this money comes back to me or increase the likelihood that it's going to come back to me, then I'd rather do that than shop at Walmart. So, you know, there are benefits to all the different places that people want to go and shop, and there are some things that you can't get anywhere else. But by using a local currency, you're, you know, like I said, just increasing your odds of seeing that money again sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of great things out there like that. And as you dig into it, you may discover that you know, the benefits of a community currency or the open currency system, you know, are completely different than the ones that we see. But that's the point. The point is that it's flexible and that it gives people the opportunity to explore the different features and benefits individually and figure out what works right for your group. Your group may be ideological. It may be geographical. But whatever the group is, it can be customized so that it works for you. And I just gave a speech last week at the Silver Summit up in Spokane, Washington.
Oh, that sounds like an interesting conference.
Yeah, that was a great time. But one of the points that I made was that we're fans of anybody that's putting financial control local again. So if you're developing a time-based economy, great. Let's take a little bit more control away from the Federal Reserve. If you're working on a LET system or, a Berkshire-style system, or, you want to start a currency that's backed up by dollars or by grain or corn, go for it. Whatever works best for your community is what we want to see you do, but just make sure that you keep control locally. So there are a lot of different systems out there. Obviously, ours is the best, but people can take their time and explore that and come to that conclusion on their own if they choose to implement a system similar to what we've done in their own town.
Well, I like what you're doing with the putting the barter networks together, and it's actually very simple to explain the whole process to a merchant. Is basically, do you ever give a coupon to your send out coupons to get new customers? Well, most of them have. Well, great.
Right.
Well, when you get done with all these coupons, what do you have? You have an envelope full of coupons, and what can you do with those coupons? Throw them in the garbage?
Right.
Well, with the Silver Barter Network, you get the coupons as a silver medallion that now you can spend again at another merchant.
That's right. It just keeps going.
Yeah, so it just keeps recycling itself. It's like it's a green economy. I love it.
Right.
Well, anyway, we'll be having you back in the next few minutes, Rob. We're going to be breaking out, but I'll be back in the next few minutes. And my name is Thomas Costanzo on Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. My name is Thomas Costanzo, sitting in for Ernest Hancock, and we have our final segment with Rob Gray. Rob, you still there?
I'm still here. Yeah, did anybody ever tell you that you actually sound like Ernest?
No one has ever said that.
You've never gotten. You guys have a couple things that you both say very similar to each other. So I didn't know if you were related or maybe you just spent too much time around each other or something.
Well, we do spend a lot of time together. Things kind of rub off,
Right, of course. I've got a couple things I've got to get into here with the store and the contractors and all kinds of crazy things. So I'd love to spend more time with you another time.
Okay.
I want to point out, though, a couple things that we're looking for right now, and I wouldn't call it a need. I would call it, an opportunity to create value for someone else. But right now, we're working on putting together the vendor list for the store. So if you've got people out there in your audience that are producing something, if they can create something of value that we can sell out of the store, we can purchase in silver, of course, pay for it with real money, and then set up distribution points at the AG Trading Post here in Dallas and the future locations that we open. We'd love to find great quality things to offer to our network of buyers here in the Dallas marketplace. So keep an eye out for that.
How would people get a hold of you, Rob?
Well, they can sign up for our newsletter on agtradingpost.com, and there's also contact information on that site for Jared Atkinson, who is the proprietor down here at the Post.
Okay.
So that's what we're looking for. We're looking for high quality, dependable goods, things that you would want to use in your own home, that you like, that you're comfortable with, that we can retail out of the store to create more value for the barter network here in Dallas. So agtradingpost.com is the temporary page holder for the soon-to-be-launched website, and you can sign up there for the newsletter. And you can also get contact information for Jared Atkinson, who is managing all of the vendors at the store.
How big
so
is the store?
If we were to invite anything from anybody out there to really make the system work, it's to have people help find things that we can put down here to attract new customers to the store and continue trading.
How big is the store approximately? I mean, is it?
We've got 5,000 feet here.
Okay. That's a good-sized store.
Yeah, we're right now kind of all high in here because they put the polyurethane coating on the polished concrete floor. So it's really high heaven. But I think that smell will be out of here in just the next few days, and we'll be able to start moving in all of our inventory.
Oh, so you haven't even put that in yet, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We're floating around in here right now.
Well, so I was on your site. I didn't see, you know, it'd be cool to have some pictures maybe of the, you know, pre-build.
Yep, we'll have those things all together, a little timeline there so you can see it coming together, a little meet the contractor area so you can know who the people are that are contributing to the success of this operation so far in trade, and that'll be all online, I would guess, by the beginning of next week.
Oh, okay, that's awesome, man. I'm looking forward to hearing about that.
Thomas, I want to thank you again for having me on the program today. Certainly love to be back anytime that that you'd like to have me on.
Okay, fantastic. That was a pleasure having you on there, Rob. And then get back to work. Well, that was Rob Gray from OpenCurrency.com talking about how the silver currency private barter network is going to effectively make your life better than it was, than using the Federal Reserve notes that have interest attached to them. And what that does by having all this interest attached to the value of the money is basically that money is being siphoned off and is destroying our country. When you look at how our country has gone downhill from the nighttime of 1913 when the Federal Reserve was first implemented along with the income tax, we have lost so much out of our country, so much of our wealth is being siphoned off. Anyway, we'll be coming back after the break on Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. I'm Thomas Costanzo.